And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source of insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of November 23rd, 2020. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to revisiting some continuing themes we've had on our shows over the past couple of years. I mean, really a decade, right, almost, that the show's been on the air, but these are some recent themes. We're going to talk about some pipeline updates that connect to the Weymouth compressor, the appearance of climate news on NBC Boston, which is great to hear that segment, and then the opacity of Beacon Hill. So tune in.
Good. So Mariah, lately it has occurred to me that there are many topics we keep coming back to on the Climate Minute. There are continuing themes and stories in that we make reference to. And I think it's important for us to recognize that and understand, I mean, more importantly, understand why these stories are important. So the crux of the story here that I will make reference to has been the Weymouth compressor, right? And every time we talk about the Weymouth compressor, we talk about how it is infrastructure that is unnecessary and will be fed by an unnecessary pipeline, right? So what's interesting this week is that the same theme of unnecessary infrastructure, fossil fuel infrastructure being foisted upon the country, pops up in a couple other places with the same, I don't know, Snidely Whiplash. So the company's Canadian. Enbridge is a Canadian company, so I can call them Snidely Whiplash. And if you don't know who Snidely Whiplash is, Google it. Enbridge is the one that is trying to build the Weymouth compressor, but it's also trying to build two pipelines, one in Michigan and one in Minnesota. And so let me tell you the story about what's happened out in Minnesota and Michigan. We'll start with Minnesota. So Minnesota is something, there was something called Line 3, which is a pipeline, again, to carry, I think it's shale oil material out of Canada and across Minnesota. And that pipeline impinges on indigenous land. Right. In particular, there's I don't know, have all the details, but it's something about wild rice growing areas where this pipeline goes through and puts those at risk if there's some kind of a spill. Well, the update is the following thing, is that the governor gave a near final approval, one of the last approvals that this pipeline needed. Very similar to what Charlie Baker has done here in Massachusetts and allowing the Weymouth compressor to go forward. But the governor of Minnesota granted an important permit. And what happened following that is that 12 of the 15 people on the Environmental Justice Advisory Committee to this project all resigned en masse. They said, okay, you know, clearly you're not listening to us. We're out of here. And it is a... You have to say that's pretty much a rebuke to the governor of Minnesota. There is still I think it's the Army Corps of Engineering permit that's got to be granted for this. And so we'll see if that lasts past January 20th and what the new president might do about that. But there's that case. A more happy instance happened in Michigan. Now, in Michigan, Enbridge, the same Canadian multinational oil giant, has been using an easement. An easement is like your property. You have an easement on your property for a road or something. Many people have easements on their property. The Enbridge has an easement to run a pipeline underneath the Strait of Mackinac in the upper Great Lakes in Michigan. Right, they've had that easement since 1953, and there's a pipeline that was laid in 1953 that is still there, pumping oil underneath the pristine waters of the Great Lakes. And Governor Gretchen Whitmer, late of the kidnap attempt and currently trying to count her votes properly. One of the things she found the time to do was to deny the continued use of that easement to Enbridge, so that the state of Michigan denied Enbridge the easement to run that pipeline, so that pipeline has to shut down. And that's a good thing for the world, good thing for Michigan. Right, Mariah?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So we have I actually have an easement on my driveway, and you know, I own the driveway, but my neighbors can drive down it. And so for Whitmer saying you can no longer use this property for the gas pipeline means that, you know, the gas can't travel through. So that's a really big deal. It's a huge sort of crimp in the proceedings of that. And it makes me really, really happy, especially as a good balance against the stuff that's going on in Minnesota. And just a little shout out, I think there's a whole bunch of people that are out there in Minnesota doing peaceful protests and putting their lives on the line to try and help stop some of this stuff. So shout out to them for doing that good work.
Absolutely. You know, there's so much going on. There's a whole, in Canada, there seems to be real heavy duty battles between the First Peoples in Canada and oil companies out in British Columbia. There's a big fight going on in Newfoundland, I think, over lobstering rights. I mean, so yes, I'm glad you gave the shout out to there are people that you know, don't get a lot of press, right? You have to go searching for that information. But there are people resisting these pipelines everywhere. And it you see these articles where the fossil fuel industry has clearly recognized that local resistance is a big problem for them, right? And slows things down. So there you go. You get two sort of Enbridge-related stories, heavy-duty infrastructure. They're in the same vein as the Weymouth compressor story that we talked about last week. It turns out that the latest turn of the screw in Weymouth is that the city councilors are trying to figure out if they are bound by the mayor's agreement. That is to say, the mayor made an agreement with Enbridge, the Snidely Whiplash of this story, Weymouth gets like $10 million over the next few years, et cetera, if they just drop the opposition. The city councilors are saying, hey, Mr. Mayor, you didn't consult us. We're going to go talk to Maura Healey, the attorney general, and find out what we can do independently of you. So that pot continues to boil in Weymouth. And it all, but the unifying theme, again, is this resistance to the infrastructure, both on the climate change scale and on the very local destruction of people's lives and livelihood in particular places, right? So there you go. That's a story. I'm sure we'll be back to that kind of thing. There's a different story that is somewhat a happier story, and actually one that is noble and makes you admire, admirable. So here in Boston, there is a TV meteorologist named Chris Groninger, I think that's his name. And he has been putting on local weather reports, basically making clear statements about climate change. And it's remarkable. I mean, there was a clip that he put up the other day, basically had a situation, one of these things they call the king tide or sunny day flooding, where roads in Marshfield, Massachusetts, at a particularly high tide are flooded. Right? That's essentially climate change. But the more interesting thing is, we'll put up a link to the segment on TV, was basically a discussion about the racist roots of environmentalism, which is a remarkable thing to have on local TV in a 5-minute slot from your meteorologist. I mean, kudos to him for even attempting that, right? Mariah, Mariah, you know a lot about this stuff, right? Did you see that?
Yeah. I did. It was a great clip, and it was he was interviewing a professor from Plymouth State College. I think her name was Abby, maybe Noyes. I'm not sure if I'm getting that right, but she talked about how some of these, you know, environmental heroes really didn't have the right tune. They weren't saying quite the right things about the environment, and they sort of left a lot behind, and they were often racist, supporting sort of these purist policies. And she even pointed to the Sierra, or maybe it might have been Chris that pointed to the Sierra Club, who publicly apologized for its roots, noting that it started as a hiking club for rich white men. Yeah. So the sort of thesis of their segment was that we need to redefine the movement and learn from our past mistakes. And I think that's huge to have that. I mean, I'm still, you know, it's sad that this is what we're hoping for. I'm still celebrating news, climate news, you know, getting out there, but then to have this sort of level of nuance and insight that was so powerful and so spot on for what we need right now was very heartening, really great to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. And I think that I come to my environmentalism pretty much by the seat of my pants, right? I have no education, but all the canon of books about climate that start out with these guys in 1910, and I mean, they all had a pretty, what I think today you would call a warped view of humanity, right? And who were the good people and who were the not so good people? I mean, this is the late 1800s, early 1900s. And they're seen as, and they are groundbreaking people. But as we learn more, new things come up, and you start. It's sort of like looking at Thomas Jefferson saying, "Hey, he did have slaves, you know," kind of thing. I mean, it recognized they're somewhat flawed people. But I think that makes the whole movement stronger, right? I mean, you begin to recognize the new foundation of what it is that is important. So kudos to Chris at I guess it's NBC 10. We'll put a link to it. Please take a look and follow. I mean, that's great stuff. I mean, we need more of that, right? I mean, we need legitimate discussion of climate, not as a political topic, but just, you know, these are facts and we need to accept those things. Another third sort of interesting dimension to some news that came up this week is not exactly climate related, but it is like spot on for climate. It's connected. There's an article, a think piece, an opinion piece in Commonwealth Magazine, which, you know, if you haven't read Commonwealth Magazine, I advise you to go out and take a look. It's online. It's a great magazine. Covers a lot of Massachusetts stuff in a very good way. Basically, this piece discussed the fact that the Massachusetts State House does not have legislative processes that are very transparent. And he says a whole bunch of buzzwords there. But what it really comes down to is that you and I, as public citizens, cannot very easily understand how bills become law, and that the actual votes by representatives are not publicized. And there are many decisions that are made in committees that are closed to the public. When the votes are taken, the votes are not even recorded. There's all these sort of what you might consider anti-democratic practices that have grown up in the 200 or 300 year history of the Massachusetts State House. And these authors call for more transparency, more light being shown on the process by which bills become law. And of course, Mariah, maybe you can explain. I mean, the big one that's got climate hawks wound up, or at least got me wound up, is that there is a really good climate bill that was passed by both houses of both the House of Representatives and the Senate in Massachusetts last July. And it has been in this secret committee hidden away since then and could well die in a back room someplace in the State House by six people looking at each other over a table and saying, you know, put that one in the file cabinet, right?
Yeah, funny in a not quite a ha-ha way, but quotes that they had in the article was, "Democracy that affects us most directly lives or dies at the Massachusetts State House, and mostly it dies." So there's not a lot of confidence there in the Massachusetts State House coming from these authors. But I do think that their point about how the most important political involvement we can have is the local politics, right? All politics is local, as they say. We get, myself included, get really wrapped up in national politics to the exclusion of what's going on in our backyard. And the stuff that's happening in right here in Massachusetts is really important to be knowledgeable about and involved with. And so this is definitely an article that made me go,
And I think they make the case that it's not the lack of transparency, the lack of just sort of publishing information that's needed. is not because the citizens don't demand it, right? And it's not because when we as citizens aren't in there asking for it. It's that there's this these policies that have built up that prevent that stuff from coming out. It, again, just like who voted how on a particular bill. I mean, that eventually sort of makes it out, but it's not very easy to get at. And that makes it hard to lobby your representative, right? If you don't know how he voted, he or she voted, I mean, it makes it tough, right? So I think that these folks are who've written the article, of course, are starting a process. So the upshot of the whole thing is that in January, since we just had a successful election, the most secure election in American history with no vote tampering of any consequence anywhere, right? There will be a new session of the Massachusetts legislature, right? All new people are elected. They're all going to go back. And in January, they're going to set up rules for how they will conduct themselves during 2021 and 2022. And I'm sure there will be climate bills in that period that we'd be interested. And the rules that are set up in January will govern how transparent, how much information flows out of the State House to the news media and us. And so I think that the action is to check in with your state representative and demand that the rules be written in a way that provides transparency. And there's links in that article you can check out, form your own opinion about the wisdom of demanding transparency. Right, Mariah?
Yeah, and you know, the authors have a couple of groups that they've started called Act on Mass, like Massachusetts, but Act on Mass, and then the Transparency is Power campaign. And so, you know, last week in our podcast, we talked about the importance of joining a climate group. And of course, MCAN is a wonderful climate group to join. And they're, you know, MCAN is very much directly a climate group. But this is an interesting one to think about too. And you can certainly join all three if you wanted to. And this, while this is, you know, this Act on Mass and Transparency is Power is not directly a climate change group, they are indirectly because they're fighting for a responsive democracy, and a responsive democracy is one that's going to address, more likely to address climate change as an issue, because a majority of the constituents are supporters of climate change, climate action. And so, you know, joining these groups and kind of becoming part of this movement to get more transparency is important to the climate movement as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what we'll do, Mariah, is I'll put up links to what we talked about on the blog. The blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have any suggestions about what we ought to talk about or questions about anything, please send us an email. The email address is podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to us on, as you probably are, on your smartphone using the Modern Podcast Distribution app. Please rate us and tell your friends that they can listen to us as well. I mean, that's how the word gets out. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support that guides us from week to week. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of those things, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for talking tonight.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.